The enemy of the pod continues.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
This was a reprehensible thing that the Cavs did. What the Cavs did was scream to the world. They have absolutely no faith in their team.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
Evan Mobley's been one of the more disappointing players in the league this year. He has not improved on offense at all.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
If you're a non-shooting forward, which is what Evan Mobley is, that's probably the least valuable player in the league.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
Well, I'm going to take Orlando also. If you go back to last year, the Cavs lost in the playoffs because they got bunked by the Knicks.
Bitch. Goddamn, I'm glad he set it off.
Non-shooting four, reprehensible, mega soft.
First you were down on Mobley. Magic in six, the gonna punk Frobley. Talking like a straight hater. Stupidity pouring out your mouth.
Derek Favors.
Did you catch that block?
Or is the only thing that counts the three-point shot?
Getting on the pot, Hoop Collective.
Here comes my awful perspective.
Let's hear it.
They will not re-sign Donnie.
Here's mine.
Woj is the only good thing from St. Cloud.
Pro bomb.
Be nicer to Brian.
My meal ticket.
Nobody tunes in just to hear your crying,
bitch.
Hypocrisy dance.
I am the arbiter of how you're allowed to advance.
Yet, who did you pick?
I officially predict the Sixers to beat the Knicks.
So don't duck opponents, but be ready to lose.
Yes, but it's noble in round one. Doesn't count in round two.
We can talk all we want about Evan Mobley's offense. Here's the reality. He's an excellent player because of his ability to rebound and defend. He already has a very high value in this league. 16 rebounds tonight, 4 blocks, countless shots that he altered.
Welcome to the Fear the Fro podcast. Cavalier fans, oh, I realize this is one series win. You're going to hear it time and time again on this podcast. Donovan downplays it.
This is great, and I'm happy that we did it, but we haven't accomplished anything yet.
JB downplays it. Darius Garland downplays it.
I mean, we haven't really done anything.
Nobody is under the illusion that today's victory solved all our problems, but good God, was it needed, because it didn't start out well. In fact, we were down 18 points in the second quarter, but in the Cavaliers' comeback victory, that gave them the largest Game 7 comeback in NBA history. And I'm going to quote this stat, even though I did not double-check it or verify it. I saw it. I'm willing to accept it. The 15 free throw makes that Donovan Mitchell had today, top 10 Game 7 performance all time. Paolo, identical, 15 makes. This was not a fluid game. By any means, both teams essentially lived at the line, pushing nearly 60 free throw attempts between the two of them. But the third quarter was where this game was won. Now, I want to speak about a bunch of stuff, but let's begin right off the top. Donovan Mitchell, 89 points over the last two games, which is ridiculous. That is, in a Game 6 and a Game 7, that is second all-time to Allen Iverson, who has scored one singular point more. It would put him 30th all-time just in playoff games, where it's how many points have guys scored back-to-back. Jordan has done 112 in back-to-back games. Of course, it's usually the same people who sit atop of these all-time lists. But for Donovan Mitchell to do this in back-to-back closeout opportunities, one we blew and one that we finished the job with, it speaks to the absolute juggernaut that man can be, even labored. Because he's clearly playing on one leg. I thought he looked a little more explosive tonight than he looked in the 50-point game. Because you could see that 50-point game, I mean, he was spent. Scored all of our points in the fourth quarter. The rest of the team, not great. And the post-game press conference for Darius Garland specifically, it was concerning to me. I was in a low place anyway. But to hear him talk about how the game plan played out in the fourth. Now, you know, say whatever you will about that game. For everybody basically not named Darius Garland to score 15 points and for Donovan to score 50 himself, that's never going to get it done. You can't have essentially two people account for all of your offense and have one of those guys, you know, do the majority of that damage in the first half. But what I really maybe overreacted to was it was one of the first questions in that post-game 6 press conference. And let me just play you Darius's response when he was asked about what happened in that fourth quarter that caused Donovan Mitchell to essentially be 100% of the Cavs offense.
No ball movement. Don had it going, so kept giving him the ball, let him rock out. Ball got stagnant. We stopped being aggressive offensively.
Now, I only play you that to set up what we witnessed today. I'm not going to rehash the stuff that went wrong. There's nobody who's going to look at this series and say, obviously, Darius Garland can do a lot more. We need to get more even contributions from Max, from Karis, from Darius, from Evan Mobley even. All these guys can do more. But the difference between two nights ago and today's closeout game was that Darius Garland showed up in a big way in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, we were just trying to get the ball moving a little bit in the fourth, trying to get the matchups that we wanted. Put the people in pick and rolls that we wanted and just try to spread the floor out a little bit so we can get some driving lanes. The ball was moving in the fourth quarter this time.
Clearly, Darius much happier with his involvement in the fourth quarter tonight, and it shows. And he should be because, and you know, Peak and Valley Darius, I realize this may not sustain. We've seen enough of, you know, good game, bad game, good stretch, bad stretch, that I don't know what we'll get next round. But I will say this. I feel good with him being on an upswing to close out this series and hopefully being able to carry that forward because you can see how significant that make in the fourth quarter was to just getting his confidence going, to see a miss on basically a wide open shot that Okoro gathered the offensive rebound to get him a second opportunity. And he finished the three from the exact same point, but with a much more difficult contest. Will this fourth be meaningful? Will it carry forward? I don't know. I mean, I'm not confident based off what we've seen, but for him to have no turnovers in crunch time, for him to make a huge defensive play, to go along with crashing the glass, to pick Jaylen's pocket, that's a play that you would expect to be in reverse. I'm not going to tell you Darius had a good series. You absolutely need more from him. But to have a couple of 20-point games before this, to have today in a game which was trending towards being an absolute abomination, for him to get 10 points in the fourth quarter and play a meaningful role in closing out that game, it's certainly not all doom and gloom. And the other thing to point out, which is obvious, I realize, after seeing them for seven games, for all the talk about us manufacturing who we are, you know, wanted to see in the first round and the pathway that we're taking, well, give me a more difficult challenge for our guards than first having to face Jalen Suggs and Gary Harris in round one, and then in the second round to carry that forward and see Derek White and Drew Holiday. Now, I wish our franchise wasn't so full of cowardice that we took our hobbled superstar and we asked him to take on two teams that perhaps have the best defensive backcourt pairings in the NBA in back-to-back rounds. But cowards we are, so our lot in life.
This was a reprehensible thing that the Cavs did.
Petty. Anyway, back to the game. Let's talk about the third quarter. That was where the game was won and lost because you take out that third quarter and this game, it was not a fluid watch. 60 free throws between the two teams. I saw another stat. Paolo Banchero went to the stripe 18 times. That would put him seventh all time in game seven, as far as the most free throw attempts in a game. This is a player just entering the league. He's already exceptional at generating contact and getting whistles. And Donovan Mitchell himself would be good for a tie for 10th place with his 17 attempts. Both guys had 15 points generated in freebies. But in the third quarter, beyond Donovan Mitchell's just exceptional performance, two other guys showed up big for the Cavs, at least two. I mean, I'm going to focus on these two guys because we all felt it. The first is, one thing I'll say about the Darius 17-point quarter is that it wasn't accompanied by a double-digit performance by another role player on the Cavs, and Max Strus gave us just that. He did not score in the first half. He committed three turnovers, had a few personal fouls, and even in that third quarter, he got a fourth personal foul. I wasn't sure if he would be able to last. He got that fourth with 9 minutes left in the third. At that point, he had still only scored three of his 11 points. They could have yanked him then. He wasn't full heater mode at that moment. For all the slings that JB will get, and he deserves some, that top of the second quarter rotation was a fucking abomination. But for him to let Strus play through that proved to be a critical decision. The easy choice there, after Sam seemed to get a little bit of a rhythm in the second, was to safeguard that Max would be available late in the game by throwing Karis back out there or by throwing Sam back out there. But he let it ride, and Max rewarded that with a second game in this series where he delivered a huge third quarter. 11 points is incredible. And he had just some exceptional two-man actions with Evan Mobley and even with Tristan Thompson in that quarter, where you saw a lot of the offense that was generated for him was high dribble handoffs, a couple of offensive rebounds that got kicked out to him, almost everything he hit. He had a left elbow three. He had a couple right elbow threes. It was created by getting just enough separation because the bigs managed to get him the ball and set him a solid screen. There's one in particular. If you go back and watch that third quarter, one of the right elbow threes that Max knocks down, you can tell Evan anticipated the pass was coming to Max because he got just enough of a screen standing near the foul line, just enough to force him to have to swing out a little wider, and he wasn't able to close on Max in time. It felt pivotal, but when you couple that with the fact that his primary assignment defensively, Franz Wagner, was 0 of 6, that is a massive swing. Those two Orlando Magic stars, Paolo Banchero and Franz Wagner, were 1 of 13 in that quarter. And that brings us to the other man, which is Isaac Okoro. Now, nobody is going to look at this box score, especially after the first half, where Paolo Banchero got to the stripe double-digit times. He was trending for a 50-burger. He had 24 points at halftime. It could have been one of those decisions we pointed to as, you know, being pivotal in eliminating us from the playoffs. And then in the third quarter, things entirely turned. It wasn't necessarily that Isaac had any highlight plays against Paolo. In fact, there were a few times Isaac overplayed in the third quarter and Paolo got past him. But it definitely seemed like fatigue might have been catching up with him. He was missing shots around the rim. I mean, he shanked a dunk from point blank range. When you look at that quarter, it really felt like the sustained energy of Isaac finally started to wear down Paolo Banchero. And the praise that he got, which should be plentiful, plus 24. He led the way for the Cavaliers in terms of the performance of the team when he was on the floor, and his defense was dogged. Donnie commented on that in the postgame.
In a game seven, how bad do you want it? Especially Isaac, like, he set that tone.
And I looked up the head-to-head stats. It says prior to this game, Paolo was 9 of 15 against him, but Isaac had generated 5 turnovers, second only to Evan Mobley. And tonight, the question I have is, when it came to determining the starting lineups, what made the decision for JB? Would he have done it without the return of Gary Harris? Or if the Magic had rolled out Jonathan Isaac and just decided to stick with what worked for them in Game 6? Because I get it, it's been very uneven home to road, but that road strategy that resulted, even though we kept the game close, to have to rely on interior scoring from Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, I thought there was something to that. Just huge guys clogging up passing lanes on kickouts, single coverage as they drive to the rim. It's a make or miss league type situation. I thought that was interesting. I'm not the second guess, because it worked out in our favor. But to go from starting Mook, playing him 25 minutes, to him getting 7 minutes tonight, drastic changes. JB expanded his rotation. We still got that horrible stretch in the beginning of the second quarter, which I guess we should acknowledge. There was a moment we were platooning Tristan Thompson with Caris LeVert and George Niang and Sam Merrill and Darius Garland, an exceptionally small lineup, despite what Tristan can provide for you. And the game took a bad swing, to put it mildly. The fact that George played just 3 minutes tonight and he led the team in negative plus-minus tells you all. There was a comically bad play where George collided with Caris LeVert, taking them both out of the play, and it ended up resulting in a Paolo Banchero bucket. Not a Sam Merrill. He is perhaps the single most discussed guy out of the Cavaliers' rotation in this series, unless you want to count, you know, Jared Allen being injured. But as far as guys who could play who haven't been, everybody was clamoring for more Sam Merrill because we have struggled mightily from outside the arc. Sub 28% we were in this series, and there were only two games where we made double-digit three-pointers. So for him to crack the lid off the rim in the middle of the second quarter, I'll say this about Sam. I was happy with his minutes. In fact, I think knowing we're going into a series with the Boston Celtics, where they have a guy that I kind of look at in a similar fashion in Sam Hauser, I think knowing that Kristaps may not play this series, Sam may be a more viable option than we felt like we could play this series. This series, it seemed like Mook was the guy who benefited, just due to the massive size of the Orlando Magic. But Sam here, in a two-playoff run, where we just have been horrible from outside the arc, if ever there is a time to play him, I trust Sam Merrill when his minutes are anchored to Donovan Mitchell. I think those two show a good chemistry. And even tonight, on that second triple, Donovan was looking for him, got it to him on that right elbow before guys really had a time to close on him. And I would like to see more of that. I know people will point to Sam and his splits and the fall off in production, you know, later in the season. But I think there's something to be said for the fact that that coincides with Donovan Mitchell dealing with his injury issues. From a strictly from an eyeball test, I like the minutes he's out there alongside Donnie. And more importantly, what he provides for us is one of the things that if we don't see an uptick there, we stand no chance in this next series. Now, I think one of the things that would give Sam more of a runway to potentially kind of take over any minutes that Morris or Niang would have got in the lineup is if we can just get one of Dean or Jarrett back. But speaking to Jarrett specifically, in the postgame, I thought it was interesting that Donovan Mitchell made the following comment in the context of a larger answer regarding Jarrett.
There's an exhale because Jarrett's coming back. I will say that.
I wasn't taking for granted at all after the coverage we saw before the game tonight that Jarrett Allen was truly close to ready. I know he traveled to Orlando and they were saying game to game, but everything before the game today was talking about the difficulties having breathing and how he can't even lift his arm over his head and how he didn't even participate in the pregame practice slot that he usually shared with Darius Garland. So I wasn't coming in to the postgame even tonight thinking that, oh, shit, quick turnaround. We might not have Jarrett. Who knows where Dean Wade is at? But Donovan's comment would make it seem like he's pretty close here. And that would be huge because it's not just that I love Jarrett. It's that, I mean, this is a second round in a row. We're going against an elite defense. We need to make it easier on our offense. And second chance opportunities will be huge here. Of course, if Dean comes in there swinging with his big monster crank, the series is over, sweeping in four. But we don't have any indication that that's a certainty. I just put my ear to the street and I listen. Sounds like it might be. I think it's coming. Is that? Oh, shit. The drippy one is almost back. But just to keep it on this injury subject, before the game, there was also a tweet from Tom Withers that Caris LeVert was suffering through the, you know, the ill effects of a knee injury. So for him to come out tonight in a game where last game, very limited, only played 7 minutes, but just the second time this series where he was able to crack double-digit points. So if we can get just shades of regular season Caris where you could count on him for 10-5-5-ish, bench production has been at a premium with Niang out of the rotation, with Sam Merrill barely playing. Mook had a huge game, of course, in this series. But until Jarrett Allen comes back, because we can all acknowledge that Evan Mobley's offensive contributions are a little less consistent, a little less reliable than what you know you'll get from Jarrett on a night-to-night basis, if Caris can keep this rolling, it gives us a lot more of a cushion if you get one of this Darius stinkers. Now, we made it almost 20 minutes without talking about the guy who the majority of the pre-open was about. And just to reset that for you, here's what I'll say. There's always going to be a ton of discourse about what's the best way to move forward. Two bigs, one big spacing lineups. Now, I get in the regular season, analytics would tell you, oh, the one big spacing lineups are good. If we're not making three-pointers in the postseason, there may come a point where we just have to accept our best path to potentially win is to muck it up as much as humanly possible, because I don't know if we can out offensive production people. If our defense is going up against another great defense like Boston, these games have the potential to get ugly. But I think one thing we can put to rest in this time when Evan Mobley has been filling in for Jarrett Allen is if there are people who weren't sure if Evan Mobley could hold up to the grind of being able to man the five spot and, you know, stay out of foul trouble or be able to match up with multiple big front courts. Well, this was a fantastic series to showcase what he's capable of. 20 blocks in this 7 games, 10 of which came in these last two closeout games, game 6 and game 7. Half of his production, as far as sending stuff away, came at a time where he was tasked with doing the most. And this comment,
I disagree with the masses on how good he is as a defensive player.
I think it's safe to say we'll never hear that uttered again. Because offensively, yeah, Evan does need to do more. You can't score 3 points in a closeout game like he did in Game 6 where he logged nearly 35 minutes. But Evan is so far ahead of everybody else in this NBA playoffs in terms of rim protection. He has 10 more blocks than the next closest guy, Chet Holmgren. And he's got 6 steals, which would put him 3rd amongst big men. Just Jokic and Embiid are ahead of him. And Embiid will be falling behind him because his playoff journey is over. But point being, it's not just the counting numbers. You have to, I get it. I was worried. If we lost this series, nobody would care about this. But now that we can look back with the benefit of hindsight and know that we escaped this, what would have been a brutal upset, Evan Mobley's work on the interior was massive because this wasn't a team that was trying to settle for outside looks. The Orlando Magic's whole game plan during the regular season was to generate points in the paint. And for Evan Mobley to have to carry that kind of load in Jared Allen's absence and to turn it on the way that he did, a massive amount of credit has to be given to him. And I played it in the pre-open, but I'm going to play it for you again here because J.J. Redick made this comment. This may not be directed at Tim Bontemps, but it certainly felt like it was. This was at the end of the game tonight.
We can talk all we want about Evan Mobley's offense. Here's the reality. He's an excellent player because of his ability to rebound and defend. He already has a very high value in this league. 16 rebounds tonight, 4 blocks, countless shots that he altered.
Tell me that's not a subtweet to Bontemps and all the people who look at counting stats and think that's a reflection of improvement. Now, Evan's got a ways to go. And I'm not even, I think there is a discussion to be had. I've seen it creeping up. What's the extension number for Evan? What is his ceiling offensively? Those are all fine things to discuss. But I think what we can say, without a doubt, this season that Evan has improved at, it's rebounding. It's controlling the glass in the absence of Jared Allen. We have not lost the rebounding battle, even though we should have got blown out the last two games, in my opinion. But we've held our own, in part because a lot of the guys off ball have been big. Donovan Mitchell was huge today. Isaac Okoro with some pivotal rebounds in these last couple games. Max with some monster games in this series. But I think you have to feel better this season, being able to trust Evan Mobley more to man the middle and control the glass, and just from an ability to hold up defensively against centers. I'm not saying he's there offensively. He still struggles with contact and things of that nature. Just massive rim protection these last several games. Now, conclusions on this series. Let's begin with the opponent. First off, huge respect for the Orlando Magic. They performed far better than I expected them to. Coming into the series, I thought that we would get very inconsistent games from their 2-star players and that their bench would be consistently good. Now on the other side of this thing, I think if anything, the bench was far more inconsistent than I expected. Mo Wagner, I hated him coming into this series. And the fact that my hate has diminished is almost 100% a direct reflection of him being fairly unimpactful compared to what we saw in the regular season in this playoff series. Tonight, just 3 points for Mo Wagner. I didn't think he was good at all in this series, to say nothing of that absurd flop last game. But Franz and Paolo were far better than I expected. And I know Franz is going to suffer from some of what Jared Allen did, which is people are going to look at this last game where he and Jalen Suggs were 3 for 28, and they're going to take some bullets, but by and large, Franz performed so much better than I expected. What Paolo did, I did expect. I thought he would be very good. I thought he'd fill up the stat sheet. Franz, though, consistently over the course of this series, where nobody could make 3-point shots, his ability to utilize the Euro step and go to the rim and draw contact, I thought it was massive. And I hope that on a national level, I know their own fans, we'll see what happened. I know we'll see what happened. But on a national level, Franz should not be slandered just based on this one singular game, because I thought he was massively important. Now, I will also say, goddamn, is that guy a shit talker in a way that I didn't realize when we got these isolated regular season games. And there's a couple other observations I would say. I did not realize the physicality that Gary Harris and Wendell Carter exercise off the ball, at least not in the leverage situations that we saw, because in this series, the grabbing, the clutching, and the little plays that are never going to draw whistles but can change the outcome of possessions, I noticed them far more in this series. And that's not slander. Again, if you can do it and get away with it, more power to you. But I did not expect
Cole to be as erratic as he was. I thought he had good moments, but by and large, not remotely consistent. Mo was much worse than I expected, and Joe Ingles was basically a zero. This was a guy who I thought was huge over the course of the regular season series against us, and he was virtually a nothing out there. So they have a huge runway to get better. Just internally, of course, but with all the cap space that they have, what I will be curious to see is, much like Evan Mobley, the discussion about where we land. I would expect Franz to get a max, simply because they have cap space and he's clearly their second best player. The conversation will be more interesting with Evan as we get towards that, because I think you could make the argument that at best he's our third best player, and depending on how you feel about Darius Garland, maybe our fourth. And we're in a much trickier cap situation than them. But Jalen Suggs earned himself some money this postseason, and Franz Wagner did a lot to eliminate many of the criticisms that people were fixated on from the regular season about his three-point shot regressing. I have nothing but respect for that team, and I expect them to be here for a while in subsequent playoff runs. Now, as it relates to us, am I happy with JB's performance? No. But that's a talking point on this podcast that I will probably kind of let fall by the wayside, because I am of the mindset that barring some absolutely miraculous upset, nothing is saving JB's job. It's just kicking a dead horse at this point. Too many upsets on too big of a stage. You cannot have performances in game 3 and 4 and then a game 6 where, even though it was close on paper, it was reliant on one man's superhuman effort in the second half where nobody else on the team contributed. Yes, players should bear the brunt of missing shots, but the reality is, whether it's their fault or not, the guy that you can get rid of is JB. If we have regrets about Darius Garland, if we have regrets about the uneven performances of Max Strus or Caris LeVert or whoever you want to pin the blame on, you don't just get to walk away from those decisions. But if we have multiple crushing, disappointing, underwhelming performances, somebody's going to be held to account for those. And at least me, I don't think this is a profound take. JB's gone. So I don't want to focus on that so much. I just want to focus on the game-to-game action and hoping that we can exceed expectations against Boston. Because, again, coming into this year, I think the majority of the fan base's feeling was an acceptable outcome for this season was a first-round victory and a competitive second-round series where we didn't look overwhelmed. Now, you can be the Tim Bontemps dick approach to it and say, well, you should believe that you can beat everyone, delusional or otherwise. Save me the speeches about sports integrity and you have to try your hardest and let the chips... No, I don't give a shit about that, because it doesn't matter. If the Cavs muddy up a game, is the presentation going to be, look at the incredible defensive intensity by these teams? No, it's going to be, look, these two assholes can't score. So I'm not concerned with the perception from the outside world. I mean, on the ABC pregame show, they ended it talking about Donovan Mitchell trade destinations, for fuck's sake, before a game 7. But the beautiful part here is that if nothing else, even if we get fucking boat raced, we will have 3 series of data against 3 vastly different opponents. This, the biggest test of them all. Now, I said one of the things that I regretted about this idea that we manufactured opponents is, would we really be tested to the level that we needed to be? I think Orlando, they lived up to that. But now we get a team that can not only muddy it up on defense, but is offensively one of the best in the league, if not the best. So whether we fail or succeed, we'll be able to come away with a much stronger feeling about what do we actually have in a Darius Garland alongside of a Donovan Mitchell? What do we actually have in a Evan Mobley in a pressure situation where teams can try to exploit his developing offense? What do we have when everybody's together? This gives us another opportunity for Jared to get back on the floor so we can get even just a handful more games. Because again, in 12 games, we have just an offensive disaster in terms of our ability to put the ball in the bucket from outside the arc. But we also have 2 teams that we faced in last year's Knicks squad and this year's Orlando squad that just, they're on another level with when it comes to mucking up the game. So I'm going to leave you with the same song you came in with. But please get your comments in at CavsPod.com, the Talk to Bob feature. And until next time, go Cavaliers.
The enemy of the pod continues. Here's what Tim thinks about you.
This was a reprehensible thing that the Cavs did. What the Cavs did was scream to the world. They have absolutely no faith in their team.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
Me, Evan Mobley's been one of the more disappointing players in the league this year. He has not improved on offense at all.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
If you're a non-shooting forward, which is what Evan Mobley is, that's probably the least valuable player in the league.
Here's what Tim thinks about you.
Well, I'm going to take Orlando also. If you go back to last year, the Cavs lost in the playoffs because they got bunked by the Knicks.
Bitch. Goddamn, I'm glad he set it off.
Non-shooting four, reprehensible, mega soft.
First you were down on Mobley. Magic in six, the gonna punk Frobley. Talking like a straight hater. Stupidity pouring out your mouth.
Derek Favors.
Did you catch that block?
Or is the only thing that counts the three-point shot?
Getting on the pot, hoop collective.
Here comes my awful perspective.
Let's hear it.
They will not re-sign Donnie.
Here's mine. Woj is the only good thing from St. Cloud.
Throw bomb.
Be nicer to Brian.
My meal ticket.
Nobody tunes in just to hear your crying,
bitch.
Hypocrisy dance.
I am the arbiter of how you're allowed to advance.
Yet, who did you pick?
I officially predict the Sixers to beat the Knicks.
So don't duck opponents, but be ready to lose.
Yes, but it's noble in round one. Doesn't count in round two.
We can talk all we want about Evan Mobley's offense. Here's the reality. He's an excellent player because of his ability to rebound and defend.